Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, and today we're going to spend the first 45 minutes or so of our program talking with you about meteorite craters of Wisconsin. Tom Evans with me in the studio today. Back again, he's an assistant director and a program leader in the bedrock geology for the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey in Madison. With me by, and Tom, welcome, by the way. Thanks for coming by today. Appreciate
thanks
it.
For having me, Larry.
And with me by phone, Dr. Bill Cordua is a professor of geology, mineralogy at the UW River Falls. And Bill, good to have you.
Well, good to be on the air with you, Larry.
You guys got started really early. Tom, you've got an early start with studying meteorites.
Well, really, I haven't really started studying meteorites all that early, but I was introduced to the Rock Elm area, where we're going to be talking about today, about 30 years ago on a soils field trip in that area. Even then, it was recognized as an unusual place, unusual soils, unusual rocks. And it was people like Professor Cordua at River Falls who took the time to very carefully map the geology in that area and gradually put together the information, the framework for which we now know as a meteorite impact study, a meteorite impact site. And so it's Professor Cordua who really did the basic hard work, and those of us who pass through the area see the benefit of that work. So.
And Bill Cordua, where's for those who aren't familiar with Rock Elm area, where is that located?
Well, it's in western Wisconsin in Pierce County, little town of Rock Elm. You could Google or find on a map pretty easily. Maybe about a half-hour drive from Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Yeah, so it's over in that neck of the Wisconsin woods a bit. Well, how did you happen to get interested in meteorites?
Well, I've always enjoyed studying meteorites, but I got involved with Rock Elm indirectly because of the soils and the geological survey. My wife took some soil science courses here at River Falls and had gone on a field trip where she was told they were going to see the worst soil in Pierce County, and they went over to Rock Elm. Well, she had enough geology background to know that she was also looking at some strange bedrock that was really unlike what was in the surrounding area. So she clued me into it. When she got back, she says, you ought to go over and do some research there. So that's how I got started mapping it.
And it took a few years.
It did, really. I was doing it almost in my spare time, but since it was only a half-hour drive from campus here, it was very easy to pop over when I had some time in the afternoon or a Saturday and map a little piece of this and a little piece of that and slowly put it together as to what I was looking at.
Oh, that's great. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question as we move along here today, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Is there any way to know how large that crater was? We have an idea. We maybe get comments from both Tom and Bill. Tom, comments from you?
Well, we know from Bill's very careful mapping that we have a structure there, a roughly circular and outline structure, about 4 miles across, 6.5 kilometers or so across in diameter. And within that, we have a series of sediments that have been mapped. But it's this circular structure, which is the distinctive feature that we see there. When we look at that, we see that the rocks that are inside that structure are different than the rocks that are outside that structure. They are at a different attitude. They are a different material. They clearly are a different age than the material in which they're found. So that kind of morphological kind of thinking tells us that we're looking at something that's different. It created this particular circular structure, 4 miles in diameter, this crater now that we know as a crater. And then we build up from there. We build up from that basic geologic setting, and that's where Bill and I have been doing some work in recent years.
And I want to get some callers online. Tony, we'll get to you in just a second here in Juneau, but something 4 miles across had to make a little bump when it hit the earth, I would have thought, Bill.
Yeah, it did. In fact, we've been there are ways to model what the effects might have been. And we figured that the thing that impacted was maybe about 200 meters across, about twice the length of a football field. So you'd imagine maybe something the size of maybe Lambeau Field hurtling out of space. And we know these things travel pretty fast, about 12 miles a second. So there's an enormous amount of energy that's going to get released. And there are ways to model what that effect would be. We figured that it would create an earthquake of maybe about 6 magnitude on the Richter scale, which we don't have anything like that around here ordinarily. Would have pretty much flattened everything. Since there was a shallow sea there, there would probably have been produced a tsunami. You would have had some debris come down into Madison from this. It would take about 6 minutes to get there.
Wow.
You would have felt the earthquake down there a little bit, and then you would have heard the sound about 15 minutes later, so the debris would be coming in at supersonic speed. So it did make a kind of a mess up here when it hit.
Well, Tony in Juneau has a question for you, so I want to get Tony in. He's been waiting a little while. Tony, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. It's a fascinating subject. I read the book Target Earth, and I just loved it.
Mm.
I have a few questions. What is the best current method you have to date craters? And the other question I wanted to know was, how often does a meteor hit the Earth that is large enough to leave a crater? These days, currently. Well, I mean, I know it doesn't happen daily, but you could talk bolides, you could talk whatever size you want.
So. All right. Thanks, Tony, for calling. And, Bill, we'll go to you.
Well, the way that we dated this particular crater was really pretty simple. We know the age of the rocks that had been deformed by this, and we also know the age of the rocks that filled in the crater. So the crater had to happen after those deformed rocks were deposited. I mean, they had to be there in order to be all broken and busted up. And then we were able to use fossils to establish the age of the material that filled into it, which had to happen after the crater. So this gives us pretty good control that we're somewhere around 470 million years ago based on that type of evidence.
You wouldn't want to have been in the way.
No, definitely not. And, of course, since that time, it's the Earth has covered over a lot of the parts of this. So when people drive through the area, it doesn't really stick out like a sore thumb to somebody that doesn't know a lot of geology. They just drive through it.
Just to help fill in a little bit, too, if you go to the survey website, WisconsinGeologicalSurvey.org, there are some pictures that are posted on that website now that you can go, and basically they're cartoons or drawings of how what might have happened when the Rock Elm impactor struck the Earth, what that might have looked like. It's based on pictures that have been developed for other impact features around the country. This is one over in Chesapeake Bay that we use as a kind of a model. But if you look at that, it gives you an idea of what we think it might have looked like, the meteor would have come into the atmosphere, it would have been glowing, it would have hit at approximately maybe about a 45-degree angle, going at those speeds of many miles per second, and it would have thrown material way up in the air, and it would have come back down. It would have filled back into the crater in part. It would have spread that material over a wide area, like Bill was suggesting, even as far away as Madison. It would have created a mess in that particular location. But a way of picturing what that might look like, and you can go to that website and take a look at those drawings. It'll give you an idea, a visual picture of what we're talking about.
Another aspect of the question was the frequency at which these occur.
Right.
And we're looking at events that may occur with intervals of tens of thousands of years between them.
Right.
So it's not something that's very common, but it does from time to time, it does occur, and we have the record of that in the craters we have scattered here and there across our planet.
Very cool. Tony, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Chris in Baraboo, we'll go to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Yes. I have been building crystals for kids.org for About 10 years now. I've been going to schools doing free gem presentations for the children in many different places, even out of state. And I have some incredible study stones that show some proof that when a meteor hits, like you guys have been talking about, it hits with such a force, an indescribable force, really, that it can break off crystals in a pocket, like let's say there were crystals in a pocket of granite. And when the meteor hit, I can see that even after crystals were broken and moved through the air at such a speed that, you know how a crystal has a terminated cap on it? I can show you proof of pieces like the middle section of a crystal broken and then moved so quickly that little tiny caps came out of each end of the broken piece.
Yeah.
Which is just incredible science information. And when I go to schools doing these gem presentations, I have to know what to tell the children. I don't want to, give them information that isn't correct. So I really had to look closely, and my goodness, I'm seeing some incredible movement, and it appears that it's the impact of the meteors. You know, if you can picture a pocket inside granite with, let's say, smoky quartz on one side and aquamarine on the other side, or they're all mixed in there pointing, and the impact of breaking the crystals inside the pocket. And I have a claim at 13,000 feet on White Mountain in Colorado, and you can clearly see that the pockets were crystal pockets, and then something happened. The pockets just didn't break apart when the granite broke, and then the crystals break, and a blue aquamarine, which is a hardness of 7, that's included into a smoky quartz that's a hardness of 7. You know, scientists for a long time thought that, oh, crystals just grow that way. Well, I can show you can look at many specimens and see that different crystals are injected into the others, and that's why I'm calling it injection.
Well, what do you think about that, Bill?
Well, there certainly impacts do a lot of peculiar things to minerals. This is one of the important bits of proof we have for Rock Elm. You have to be a little bit careful because earthquakes and mountain building can also break crystals in pockets. So I think it depends on a particular specimen as to maybe what force was at work to really fracture these things up. Sounds like you have some really wonderful questions, and I compliment you on bringing this kind of information into the schools.
Yeah. Tom?
Yeah, just you're really touching on an interesting thing. It is an important feature for the recognition of material that's been in a meteorite impact situation. We do see evidence in the mineral grains that are found in the Rock Elm structure, evidence of extreme shock. And when we see the shocked quartz crystals in that particular setting, then that tells us that we're looking at some extremely high pressures related to low temperatures but very high pressures over very short periods of time, and then we're looking at shock features. So shock does, in fact, occur in minerals, and therefore it is very important in that particular setting. The crystals that you might have found in White Mountain may not have been disturbed by a meteorite, but they certainly are, again, evidence of the disruption of when something has formed.
Yeah, very interesting. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate your call. I want to get some others a chance to get on here. Tom Evans, Assistant Director and Program Leader in Bedrock Geology for the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey in Madison. Our guest today is Bill Cordua, who is a professor of geology mineralogy at the University of Wisconsin River Falls. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join in our discussion today as we talk about meteorite craters of Wisconsin, zeroing in a bit on the crater at Rock Elm with our two guests, Tom Evans and Bill Cordua, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us as well at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Marie and Appleton up next, so let's go there. Marie, hi.
Hi. Do you know about the meteorites near Chicago at O'Hare Field?
Yes, there actually are two meteorite impact features in Illinois, and that's one of them. The one up by Chicago O'Hare is one. It's pretty much a buried structure, as far as I understand. But beyond that, I would have to look in the literature to find out more about that particular feature. There's great information about all of those features available to you on the web.
Very good.
And you can go to our particular website, for example. We'll have links to those. If you go to WisconsinGeologicalSurvey.org, you will find links to some of what's called the Earth Impacts Database. You can look at that database, and you can find by its location in near Chicago, or you can find by its age, or however you know it, information about that particular meteorite impact site.
Thank you much.
Yeah, that particular database includes information on 176 confirmed meteorite impact sites in the world that we're aware of at this time. So. Mm.
Thanks, Marie. Appreciate the call. Dave in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Dave.
I just heard where I can find out the answer to my question, which was, are there any other confirmed meteorite impacts in Wisconsin?
There are. There is one other meteorite impact site in Wisconsin, and that's the Glover Bluff site in a northern part of Marquette County, actually about 4 miles south of Coloma. And this is a smaller site. It's not nearly as well-developed as we see at Rock Elm, but it's a site in which you see disturbed rock, roughly of the same age as we see, by the way, at Rock Elm, which is interesting. But it's not nearly as well, the features associated with it are not nearly as well-developed. But it does have one kind of diagnostic feature of meteorite impact sites, and that's what are called shatter cones. And these are features that appear in the dense rock that has been impacted. They look like kind of inverted pyramids, kind of a whole stack of them sitting on top of each other, like a whole bunch of sugar cones in the ice cream store. And those cones are pointing towards the direction of the shock. We do see shatter cones with the Glover Bluff site. But some of the other features that we see at Rock Elm, for example, are not present there. So there's a variety of indicators of meteorite impact sites. And at Rock Elm, for example, we only see maybe one shatter cone or a very limited number of shatter cones. But we do see the other features that are associated with meteorite impact sites. So Glover Bluff is the other site in the state of Wisconsin that we're aware of.
Okay. Are there iridium deposits associated with these impactors?
Bill, you want to chime in?
Well, we've been looking for those specifically. Iridium is an element that is present in meteorites in quantity, but is not terribly common on the rocks of the Earth's crust. So where you see rocks that have a large amount of iridium in it, that kind of suggests they have a meteorite component. We've analyzed some of the rocks over there for iridium and found just trace or background amounts, nothing really spectacular. But it's kind of hard to pick the exact layer of rock you want to sample because it has to be underneath, right at the base of the rock package that's deposited in the crater. And if you're looking at the very bottom or at the right layer that was produced by stuff thrown out of the crater, you're probably not going to get a spike.
Interesting. Thanks, Dave, for calling. Appreciate it. Ron in Great Lakes, Illinois, we turn to you next. Hi, Ron.
Hi there. I specifically want to say good to hear Bill on the radio. This is Ron Reapy from College of Lake County down here in Grays Lake, Illinois.
Goodness.
Bill and I, for heaven's sakes, are graduate school colleagues from too long ago. But, Bill, it's good to hear your voice.
Well, good to hear you too, Ron.
Bill, let me ask you to share some additional information about some of the challenges in with respect to applied geology or environmental issues at meteoritic impact sites, whether it's the Rock Elm site or other similar sites, in terms of surface water or groundwater or other issues that some of the homeowners or developers might be challenged with.
Oh, that's a great question. In fact, Rock Elm is unique in that regard. in this part of Wisconsin because the basin filled with sediment that's very different from the surroundings. And the basin filled with sediments that are very clay-rich. They've had pyrite developed in them because they were deposited on sort of stagnant conditions. And this shows up in the soils. The soils are not suitable for the kind of agriculture that occurs in the surrounding areas. And as Tom mentioned earlier, this was known on a soils map before we really understood what it was. The soil scientists had this anomaly mapped out. So there's different agriculture land use inside it. If you look on Google Earth, you'll actually see less fields and more forest land that outline the feature pretty well when you look at that. The water quality is not as good as elsewhere. That's primarily because of the pyrite, the more acidic water. So they have drinking water problems. The clay-rich rock that filled the crater makes slopes that are a little less stable, foundations a little less stable.
No.
So there's you have to develop the land differently inside this feature than you do outside, and this fools a lot of people. They say, well, I'm just going to borrow a parcel of land, and so they drill a well, and they're surprised they don't get the same good groundwater that people a few miles away are getting. And I think that's one of the important aspects of mapping these out, so we really understand the distribution of these rocks and why they're there, and then we can help communities as they develop to use the land a little bit better.
Yeah,
well, thanks for sharing that. I think that's really of value for all kinds of land use challenges in sites such as this. So it's not unique there. You have some similar kind of problems at other sites throughout the Midwest?
I think, you know, a lot depends on the kind of rocks that are exposed in it. I mean, sometimes it's a blessing. In a place in down in Indiana at Kentland Dome, for example, this has brought up rocks from deep down that are very good to quarry for building stone that otherwise the area doesn't have as good resources for crushed stone. So there can be good and bad aspects to these things.
Oh, yeah, I remember that at Kentland. You're right. It does bring up construction stone materials, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
That's a surprise.
So it does different things. The rocks in these craters are different than the surroundings, and sometimes that could be good, and sometimes that could be that could create problems.
Not so good. All right. Ron, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. We have a question for our guests today, Tom Evans and Bill Cordua. Let's go to Scott in Columbus next. Scott, hello to you.
Hello. Good morning. I wondered if either of your guests had heard about the possible conjecture that the Horicon Marsh was an ancient meteorite crater. You've got the Horicon Ledge on the eastern border of the marsh that runs north all the way to along the marsh all the way to the Waupun area. It's a beautiful, you know, beautiful geological formation for anyone who hasn't seen it. It's a great place to visit. You know, that ledge might be the rim of an ancient meteorite crater. I was wondering if either of your guests had heard about this idea and know of anyone doing work on that.
Okay. Well, let's check it out. Tom, do you know?
Well, no, I don't. That's a new thought for me to hear, but it's an interesting one. My impression of Horicon Marsh is that it's related to clay soils that's holding up the water table in that particular area. But the actual origin and stuff, I'm just not personally familiar enough to comment on that.
Bill, how about you?
Well, again, I'm in the western part of the state, so I'm less familiar with the geology over there. But I do know that the ridge and escarpment is made of rather tilting hard rocks that can be traceable for quite a distance and really doesn't necessarily make a circular feature. But this is people are looking at all sorts of anomalies on our planet to see if they fit in with the meteorite origin. And even if you find a circular feature, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's an impact structure. You have to find, the smoking gun is to find effects of shock metamorphism, shock features that could be produced in no other way than to have one of these supersonically moving meteorites strike our surface.
Interesting. Well, again, thank you, Scott, for calling. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us at 800-642-1234. It was one interesting thing. I went to your website, and Tom was looking at it, and meteorites come burning into our atmosphere, and so you know they're glowing balls of fire. You'd think, man, these things, when would you be able to touch them? They'd be so hot. But that is not necessary. No, that's not the case, is it?
It's not the case, and it's kind of interesting. It's an interesting sort of counterintuitive thing about meteorites. When they enter the atmosphere, they do start, the outside starts to heat up, and it forms a fusion, what's called a fusion crust on the outside. The inside of a meteorite, particularly if it's an asteroid, part of an asteroid that's coming into the atmosphere, is quite cold because space is quite cold. So it's been cold up there for 4 billion years or so. But when it comes into the atmosphere, the friction heats up, and the fusion crust begins to melt, and that seals off the inside from any further heating. When they have been found, when meteorites have been found on the ground shortly after they've fallen, they've broken apart, people have reported, and this is what was reported up in the Colby find up in Clark County, that they actually saw frost forming on the rock shortly after it impacted the ground. So, again, kind of a counterintuitive thought about meteorites, but
yeah,
that's right.
But an interesting one for sure. Someone who tuned in late was wondering again about the Rock Elm location, and Bill, just go back to you for that. Where do we find that Rock Elm crater?
It's in Pierce County, Wisconsin, not too far from, the town of Ellsworth, the county seat, is maybe 20 minutes drive away from it. There's a county park there called Nugget Lake Park that has some exposures of some of the rocks that were affected by the impact, and that's generally a good place to go and see a little geology about it.
Oh, that'd be cool. Chris in Spring Valley, we're on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hello. I'm just calling with a question on if the Rock Elm meteor had anything to do with the nearby Nugget Lake that you mentioned. And then also, are there other fossils in the area? And I'll hang up and listen on the radio.
All right. Thank you, Chris, for calling. Well, Bill, go back to you again.
Okay. Well, the lake itself is a dammed up river valley. So it's a nice kind of windy lake that simply reflects water filling the old valley. Great place to canoe. But the lake itself was not produced by the impact. The impact boundary is a little bit north of the lake, and then it extends for about 4 miles beyond that up to the north and south and east and west. The reason it's called Nugget Lake is that there have been small amounts of gold found in the stream sediments. Now, to call them nuggets, I think, is a little bit of salesmanship, because they're more what we call flower gold, little tiny particles. But some gold painters go over there and have some fun looking for it. So that's why it's called Nugget Lake. But the park itself does have some outcrops on the northern edge, and we're working on a popular field guide that I hope to have ready sometime late this spring, that will take visitors on a little walk around to look at some of the exposures and explain what they're seeing, and then a short drive, well, they'll see some other things that you can't see in the park. So I'm hoping that'll help people that want to visit the area, because otherwise you could drive right through it, and most people wouldn't even know they're driving through something unusual.
Yeah. Well, Rick in Port Washington has a question or comment. Let's go to Rick. Hi, Rick.
Hi there. I'd like to ask the gentleman if there's any restrictions on either collecting or searching for meteorites in those general locales, other than to respect private property of the area.
Sure. Tom, go to you first.
Sure. I think the key to remember there, Rick, is that you need to respect private property, and the Glover Bluff site, the Rock Elm site, both involve extensive areas with private property. So you need to ask for permission to go on land. The streams in the area are basically public streams, and you can you are allowed to walk in those streams, and should you be looking for flower gold, as Bill was just talking about. So it's a matter of permission to access that property, and permission to pick up anything that you might find on the property would have to be given by the landowner.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you for calling. Jim in Clear Lake, on to you now. Hi, Jim.
Well, hi, Larry. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I hope I can explain this correctly, but it was surprising to hear Rock Elm on the radio. It's such a, it's very unusual. But up by the town near Elm called Elmwood, which is also like Pierce Dunn County,
mm-hmm.
There is an area that an individual I know have found something that that I've seen, like at the Field Museum or out in D.C., that if the meteor would hit, it spews out like crystalline, semi-crystalline materials. And there seems to be an area pretty close to Elmwood where there's a deposit of that.
Hmm.
Is that something that your guest from the West Central area would be interested in?
Bill?
Yeah, I would. There is material that gets blown out of these craters and produces glass that gets thrown all over the place. I haven't found any deposits from the Rock Elm crater of that sort, but that doesn't mean they aren't out there. I'd like to take a look. Now, there's other things that it could be. So, I'd have to see some materials to be sure. But, you can find me from the University of Wisconsin River Falls website, and I can drop you an email, and I'd like to see what people have out there.
And your last name again was?
Cordua, Cordua.
Okay, I will get in touch with you through the email.
Okay, sounds great. Sounds interesting.
Thanks a lot. Well, maybe we've got another discovery here for you, Bill.
You know, the people in the public often do bring me some interesting leads, so I'm always happy to hear what people have to say.
Jerry and Mason is up next. Jerry, hi to you.
Hi, it's Gary, and hi to you, Larry. I was just calling because it struck a real familiar chord with me. I grew up in Menominee and the Spring Valley area, and actually have family that was in Rock Elm and may know, actually be related to some of the people in which some of these findings have been found. And I don't really want to mention any names because, for the sake of the privacy. But I guess I was interested or curious. I do plan this summer to go and I still have a cousin that has ownership of the land off of 72. But I was wondering if there were any exposed places. I think I heard you mention earlier, possibly along the river courses or whatever, that would show this, the anomaly in the geography.
Mm-hmm. Bill?
Geology is. Probably the best place to look is in Nugget Lake Park, and there's some of the road cuts between there and Rock Elm where you can see some of the unusual rocks. So once we get this field guide together, I think that will really help people to pinpoint exactly what it is that they're seeing. And the guidebook takes you to like road cuts or overlooks where you're not going onto private property. We don't want to direct people into somebody's land and the like. But you can actually learn a lot just by driving some of the roads and walking in the public park.
Right.
All right.
Well, it's very interesting. Anyway, thanks very much for your program.
Yeah, appreciate your call, Jerry. Thank you very much for calling. And Joy in Madison, on to you. Hi, Joy.
Hello. I have a friend who has an old barn up in Clark County, and supposedly it was built, the story was it was built on some meteorite pieces in the rubble of the foundation. Is that metal detectable or anything? Could that be searched at all? Or?
Okay. Tom, what do you?
Well, yeah, you can search. They're usually meteorites will have some iron and nickel component to it. Some meteorites have more than others, but the iron will respond to a magnet. So you can search for meteorites in that way. Interestingly enough, I've been told that one of the great ways to find meteorites in parts of Wisconsin, or look for those fields where the farmers have actually cleared the rocks off to the sides of the fields.
Oh.
And then if you go along those with your magnetometers, you can find the ones that respond, if there are any there, of course. And they're quite rare, but that's not a bad place to look, or foundations and things of that nature from natural rock.
Oh, interesting.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. We lost Bill. We lost Bill, but that's okay. Bill, I appreciate you being with us. We still have a little bit of time here to go before we switch gears. So, maybe we'll take another question. What kinds of data, interesting data have been collected at, for example, the Rock Elm site?
Well, in addition to mapping the geology, we have done sampling of the clays because we wanted to understand what the rocks inside the structure were like and how they differed from the rocks outside the structure. So we've analyzed the clays, we analyzed the geochemical content of those clays, and looking for iridium spikes. Bill is right. I mean, there is no astounding iridium concentrations with Rock Elm, but there is a sample that did give us a value of about 700 parts per trillion iridium, which is above background, a little over twice above background for iridium. So there's enough indication of specialness in that sense that would indicate to me that a more concentrated, more structured program for geochemical sampling might bear some fruit for that.
Mm. And one more question from Mark in Janesville. Hi, Mark.
Hi there. I've got a question. I'm an old deer hunter and spent a lot of time hunting near the Wolf River, and there was one particular, 30-foot spot that always set off the handheld compasses. And we've always been curious about that because it was predictable year after year. I didn't know if that was something that these strikes might do.
I don't think it's necessarily related to a meteorite impact site. And, of course, if it's related to a concentrated area of rock, it could simply be iron in the rock itself. And one of the ways they used to map in Wisconsin is with magnetically sensitive equipment to look for those kinds of differences, to measure the differences in the magnetic character of rock. But one of the ways in which meteorites themselves are found, the objects themselves, is with those handheld magnetic survey equipment that can pull up a magnetic object. So the idea of doing that as you're going surveying in a vast area, say along the Wolf River, probably not related to a meteorite per se, but could be related just to magnetic differences within the bedrock exposed along the river.
Yeah, there are some areas in the northern part of the state where I've been with three or four different people. We all had compasses all pointing in different directions, when you're only 100 feet apart. So yeah. So it can happen. Well, I'm sure we lost Bill. Bill, thank you very much. I hope you're still listening on the air here for being with us today. And Tom, of course, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. And what's the website address again for the survey?
It's WisconsinGeologicalSurvey.org. O-R-G.
WisconsinGeologicalSurvey.org.
Right.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Tom Evans is Assistant Director and Program Leader in Bedrock Geology for the Wisconsin Geological and Natural History Survey in Madison. And Dr. Bill Cordua is Professor of Geology Mineralogy at the UW River Falls. So really pleased to have them with us. I learned a lot today. And coming up, we're going to learn a little bit about sheep and about wool as well, and the wonders of wool. That's coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.